About 25 years ago, close on 25 years ago, my husband had a great burden for youth. And so he commenced, along with others, he got others to come in with him, and commenced a youth meeting. Now this youth meeting ran for about 5 years, and it served a very real purpose at that time. We had a lot of blessing. Many, many young people came to the Lord, and it was in the very early days of anything like that. I think there was perhaps only one other youth meeting going at the time. This is in our assemblies. And towards the end of the 5 years, our attention was brought to the need of commencing camp work. Now, the gentleman that headed our organisation, and at that time we called ourselves United Christian Youth, we went before a magistrate about some land, and we didn't know where the land was. We knew nothing about it. And he came back and he said, "I don't think that was any good," because the magistrate just sat there with his head in his hands and he didn't seem to be listening to me. There were other people after this land, and when he stated our case, well, we had no money, nothing at all, but just a desire to do something for youth. My husband said to him, "Well, you can never tell when a man's got his head down. He might have been really listening very intently." Well, he was listening intently, and God was in this, and the land was granted to us. As I say, we didn't know where it was. We were told that it was a piece of land of 5.5 acres right on the edge of Kooringai Chase. Now, I guess most of you would perhaps have heard of Kooringai Chase. This land is situated about 1.5 miles into the bush, and we are the last block on the chase. And this has been wonderful because we could be 500 miles away from the city. It's so peaceful and quiet there, and yet we're so close to the most beautiful beaches in Sydney, only 10 minutes away. 10 minutes away from a good shopping centre, 10 minutes away from a hospital. And we need to use that hospital from time to time, as you can imagine, at a youth camp. So it took them quite a while to find the land. They used to go from block to block. It was bush everywhere, and they just find this peg. No, that's not the one. And they finally found it. And here it was nestled, that last piece caught into the chase. So that we've never been able to be built out. Now, we commenced work, and I'll have to tell you that it's been a very, very difficult and hard work. And if we had have known at the time what was ahead of us, we'd have never been going to start. So it was good that we didn't know. God kept us completely in the dark about that, and it was good that he didn't, because we wouldn't have had the courage or the faith to start. So my husband was still working at his plumbing business, but he used to go out on a Saturday. In those days, we only went out about once a month. And after quite a long time, we got the first building up to the roof level, and it came Christmas time and holidays, and we were all away. And during that time, a tornado hit that area. And when we got back, it was flattened to the ground. We just stood there, and all the work of months and months and months. And, you know, there was no road either. We had to even build roads to get in. That's why I tell you it was hard. And here it was, completely flattened. The roof was half on, and because the wind was so strong and couldn't get the roof off, it blew under, and the whole thing came down. I could still hear a voice behind say, "Let's give it away." But then my husband said, "No, we'll start again." And we started again, and from that time onwards, there's been nothing like that. It's just gone forward. We worked there part-time for quite a few years. The working bees were stepped up. We came to about every weekend at that stage. And then my husband used to take off sometimes 2 or 3 weeks at a time when some special job needed to be done. And then gradually he began to give away a bit more time, Friday, Thursday. And during that time, God was speaking to us. Now, we had a separate call. And one day, Livingston, that's my husband's name, said to me, "I want you to pray about going full-time to Camp Kedron," as the camp was called. "I feel that God's asking me to give up my business and go." And I said, "Well, that's strange. I'm getting the same message." And both of us were putting up barriers. I was saying, "But Lord, what about my children?" I had 4 at the time. My youngest son was born about the time we got the land. And my husband too was putting up barriers and working out all sorts of ways that he could work his own way of going. That every one of them, he just got a full stop, just go to Ingleside, was coming through all the time. And as I say, I put up barriers. I thought, what are my children, a mile and a half out in the bush, how will I get them to school, and this and that. And so it went on. And it just seemed as if the Lord was saying to me, now I'm not concerned about your children in this way or any of these things. I'm only asking you, are you willing to go? In the end, I said, yes, all right, Lord, I'm willing to go. And we became very excited about it. But it took 8 years before I got in and 6 before my husband went. And I wondered at that time why it was so long, because I really longed to go. I think one of the reasons was we used to go down every Saturday or Friday night. We used to go down and I'd pack the car up. You'd have to take your water and everything with you, and because we had no water and no electricity. And I used to pack the car up and we'd get home with the 4 children, you know, about 8:30 at night, and it was quite a business. And I used to think, oh, won't it be lovely when we're living there and I can just walk across from the camp to the cottage and everything will be all right. Now, during that time, we had a campaign at the Willoughby Gospel Chapel where we attended, and a lot of you, I think, would know Mr. Seth Hilton. He was the speaker. And he brought 2 carpenters with him. And he came down to look at the camp. And at that stage, my husband had, along with others, had finished the first building. And incidentally, they had to go to Bradfield and pull down this building and then re-erect it. This was the sort of things. Old timbers, because we had no money at all, just nothing. And we got old stuff all the time. We just sort of lived from hand to mouth for that time and used to have to pull the nails out of the old wood to start again. And that's why the progress has been extremely slow. But however, he came down to look at the camp, and Lev had just started on the bunks in the dormitory block, and there were 48 of them to be built. They were double bunks, and he'd just started in the first cabin. At that stage, he was taking 2 or 3 weeks off his work to start them. And he said, look, I'll tell you what I'll do. This is very slow for you. I'll leave my 2 carpenters with you, and you can have their help for about 3 months, because we were very excited. And Liv came home that night. He said, well, I'm leaving for Ingleside tomorrow. I'm giving up my job and going with them, because they needed to have him with them. And so this was what he did. It was just overnight he just left, and the business gradually dwindled away, so that my life began to alter from that time onwards, because I was at home with the 2 boys. The 2 girls had left at this stage, one to be married and one to go teaching in the country. And the 3 men worked down there, and it was my job to prepare all the meals at home and send them down. They leave on Monday morning to go down. They come back Wednesday night and stay the night there and get fresh supplies, and off they'd go. And then they'd come back Friday night, or my husband come back Friday night, pick the family up, we'd go down Saturday, and then they'd all come back Saturday night. And that's how we went. 3 months time, the young men left, and my husband was just starting our cottage. And so he said, well, look, I'm not coming home now, I'm staying full time. So he was down there on his own. His only companions were the kookaburras. He really used to, they used to walk along with him, come to tell him it was time to be fed and all this sort of thing. So once again, my life changed again. Liv would go off on Monday morning with supplies. I would do what was necessary in the home, and I'd leave with the boys on Wednesday morning and go down, catch a couple of buses, and he would meet me. And then I did it again Thursday. I'd do it 2 days, and then I'd come back in time for the boys coming home from school on Thursday, and then my husband come back Friday, we'd go down Saturday. So this went on for 18 months while the home was being built. Now, during those 8 years for me, I used to wonder, now, why can't I get in earlier than this? Because I felt that I was ready to go. I really wanted to be full-time in that work. But it was during those 8 years that the Lord had to deal with me, and he had to teach me many things. In the early part of the 8 years, my children had become teenagers, and I found that I was in conflict with my eldest girl. She was very strong-willed, and I think I wanted to cast her into the mould I'd been cast into. And I learned, it took me a while to learn that you just don't do that, because every child is an individual and you have to just deal with them in the right way. Well, It was during that time that I realised, I thought of all the fruits of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, and I felt that I didn't have any of them. And I really sought the Lord with all my heart, and I nearly gave up. I don't mean I nearly gave up my Christian life, but I nearly gave up seeking for a something better, because I just thought, I got to the conclusion, and you'll think this was a crazy statement, but it was true. I thought, well, now God has got his favourites, and I'm not one of them. Because I just didn't have the patience that I needed. It lasted a few minutes and off we go, you know, head on, confrontation. Well, it was at that time, that all happened around about the time that we had the crusade at Willoughby. And I had a Christian neighbour two doors up. And we got very involved in this crusade with visiting and praying together. We started off praying once a week and we ended up praying every day together, bringing the needs of our family as well. And it was during that time that, as I sought the Lord, I didn't know what had happened to me, but I just came into an experience with the Lord that completely changed my life. And as I looked back on it, it was just that I handed over my life completely to the Lord, to his control. I apparently had been holding back. I didn't realise that I had all the power within me to be patient, to be kind and loving and all those things, because I had the Spirit of the living God within me. But I hadn't really appropriated all of what I had, and I hadn't allowed God to work in my life as he wanted to. And so that was the commencement. And I tell you, before the first weekend was over, my daughter saw the change and commented on it. And from then onwards, of course, things were different because I had a new way of life. And as the years went by, before I came into the camp, so I grew in the Lord. And this was really necessary because I would never have been able to stay there. I've been there almost 7 years now. I could never have stayed there because I just wouldn't have been able to cope with the situations and with the life, the constant life that is involved in being a worker in a camp. Well, the 6 years went by that my husband was in the camp, and the 8 years for me waiting to get in. And I can remember the day we went in. We had our home at Lane Cove, and we had decided, we felt that we should go in and care for ourselves. We didn't feel that we should go in as commended workers, because my husband had had a business for many years, and he had never felt that he should go in this other way. So we decided we didn't know what to do. We'd either sell our house or let it. And we got no clear guidance about selling our home, and it was at that time it was very difficult to sell houses. There was a bit of a credit squeeze at that time, and so it seemed to be that we had to let it. But he'd been away from home so much working at the camp that so much needed to be done that we couldn't let it for a while. We had to go back one day a week for the next 6 months after we went into Ingleside. The house at Ingleside wasn't finished, and so we came down that the night before our 13-year-old started in a local school, Narrabeen. And I can remember coming down in that car and feeling so apprehensive and fearful. How was I going to cope with all the situations that I was going to be faced with? And then came the thought, well, if God has asked me to come into this camp and to do this work, well, surely he'll be able to give me the ability to do what he's going to ask me to do. So down we came. And there were a lot of things to fix up. No transport, no buses that go to school and all these sort of things. And every afternoon we'd go up to meet, no bus right down to the camp. We'd have to take our son to a bus, and then we'd go up in the afternoon to pick him up, and he wouldn't be there. There were only certain buses, and the man wouldn't let a certain number on, not realising that that was the only bus he could catch. And all these sorts of, there are little things, but they all amounted to, you know, little difficulties along that first year. I think it was one of the hardest years we have ever had, because we were tremendously excited about being in. And when we arrived, we just put a mattress down in one room and two mattresses in another room for the boys. We had no curtains or anything like that. It was just simply the bare boards. And all the big machines were in the house. And every day the house was covered from one end to the other with sawdust. Now, when we moved into our original house, which my husband built, it was the same way. It was half built. And I went in there 6 weeks before my second child was born, and we did the same thing. So I said, never again will I go into an unfinished house. Well, of course, years later, I did just that. But I was very happy to go in this time because I was so longing to go in. But the first year, we just set about to finish the house and to go back to the house at Lane Cove to get it all fixed up, to let it, to get our eldest son established at university, he had to buy a bit of a car. We used to have to go out with his small reserves to go out and buy the car with what he had. And we finally settled everything and took from that end of January to the next Christmas before we looked around and felt that we were in a home and at home. The next year we started to run camps. Well, we started to cook for camps. Now, as I've looked back over my life, even the last few days as I was thinking about what I would tell you, I just thought how wonderfully the Lord works. My father was an accountant and my mother was a home science teacher, and they both taught me their skills, and I didn't know at that time that all these years later they would be the two things that I most needed to use in the camp, the cooking and the figure work and the administrative work that he had taught me. And see, that happened all those years before. And another thing that I was thinking about was that when we came into camp, I had never had anything to do with a camp. I'd never cooked in a camp, except just for a fellowship camp while we were building it. But I knew nothing about the running of camps or anything like this. All we had were on the building side of it. And I thought, now, how am I at my age going to cope with teenagers and all these sort of things? And, you know, the wonderful part was that I had three children, and I thought that was it. And at the age of 39, I got this great desire for another child. And I thought, this is ridiculous. You know, fancy wanting another baby when you're 39. I'd be 40 when the baby arrived. And how could I cope with a teenager? I'd be 60 when he was 20. And all this was running through my mind, but I got no peace about it. In the end, I said, all right, Lord, if you want me to have that baby, you'll have to give it to me. And he did. 2 months later, I was having a baby, and this was my young teenager, and he was 13 when we moved into the camp, just the ideal age. And I tell you, he wasn't an ordinary teenager either. He was the most way out boy. I used to wonder sometimes, where did I get him?
Would you please turn the tape over at this point?
I used to wonder sometimes, where did I get him? Because I'm a very conventional person, and he's a very way out boy, and he's always been a way out boy, and he still is. And I tell you, over those years, the first year in camp, he had an accident, and the second year in camp, he had an accident. The first camp, he lost part of his hearing, and the second camp, he's got a plate in his arm. He did everything with great gusto, you know, put everything into it. And I never knew from day to day what he was going to do. He became very interested in surfing, and he used to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning as a 14-year-old boy. I wasn't going to tell anybody at the time because I thought they'd think I'm a shocking mother. But he always wanted to do his own thing. He just felt he was grown. He'd been brought up in a grown-up family, really, and he just wanted to be a grown-up. He was years ahead of his time in that respect. So he'd get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. He'd walk up to the main road to Mona Vale. He'd summer ride with the garbage man down to Narrabeen. He'd go surfboard riding and then go across to school. And, you know, I just simply would have to rest in the Lord over it, because I would never know whether he'd arrived at school or not. I just had to hope he had. And he was sort of a boy, I could not pull him in with reins at all. I'd have lost him if I had tried. So I learned so much through that boy. And as I deal with teenagers now in the camp, I can look at them and love them, because he has taught me so much. And I don't think that they're, horrific or anything like that. I might have once at the things they do. They come in, you know, with one ear without anything in voice, and another ear with a little, a little ring through it, and all these sort of things, and they do crazy things. But having had a crazy son, I'm just absolutely at home with him. And this was another thing, I believe the Lord was in his plan that I had this boy, because I really felt I was too old. But it hasn't proved that way at all. He's been sort of part actor, and I don't know what. He takes off Norman Gunston and all these characters on the TV, and he goes out into the street. He's just been to Tasmania to do a Bible course for 9 months, and this was, you know, tremendous for us, because he was just on the way right out as far as Christian things were concerned, and he was going to conquer the world as an actor. And he was just about to go on TV one night, and And I'm diversing, I had no thought of telling you this, but this just shows how God can work. And as mothers, we need to be encouraged and just to keep on praying, because, you know, God wants our teenagers to be all out for Him. That's His plan for them, I'm sure. This particular night, we had to go to a 50th anniversary party for some friends, and this boy at this stage was just about into acting, you know. He really thought he was going to conquer the world, and Channel 10 were very excited about him, and he was going on this variety session that night, and oh dear, it's a session I don't like at all, I would never watch it. But we were going to this party of old friends of my husband's, and he said, "You're not going to be home to watch me." And he thought it was dreadful, so we thought, well, we'll just make an appearance at this party and we'll go home. Started at 9:15, it went on till 11, I think. So we did that and we came home. We didn't get in till a bit, 2:15. Oh, anyway, it was on for about 2 hours. We were a little bit late home. We switched it on and we sat through all this garbage. It was garbage. And I thought, fancy my son being a part of this. Really fancy. It would, you know, if he'd gone on, it would have been dreadful. Anyway, he hadn't gone on. 11 o'clock the phone rang. It was my son-in-law. He said, "What's happened?" I said, "I don't know." I said, "We were 1/4 hour late home," and I thought, "I must have missed him." He said, "No, he wasn't on." We thought, oh, he'll be heartbroken, you know, because he'd staked his life on this. It was going to be just the end of everything for him. Anyway, I didn't hear a word from him. He didn't come home that night. Oh, wonder what he's doing, you know. What's happening? And he stayed at a friend's place. He turned up the next afternoon and he wasn't a bit upset about it. There was always another time, you know. He had one of those sort of natures that, you know, there's always something around the corner. It's okay. Well, apparently what happened was that the station take three lots. They do it three times and then they get one good one out of it. Well, they were running very late. He was early and they only took one, and the one wasn't any good. And he, later on, he said something to me about it. And I said, "Well, mate, you know that this was of the Lord, but you weren't to do it." He said, "I know, Mum." But at the time, of course, he didn't. The next night, we had to go to the dedication of our new grandchild. And we were all sitting there. And I said to him, "Are you going?" He said, "Oh, yes, I'm going." So in he walked with this girl that I had never seen before. And when I looked at her, I thought, oh, she looks so tizzy, you know. This is really true, because we all got the same impression. My daughter's got the same impression too. And in he came, and you know, the minister, it was in an Anglican church, and the minister that night gave the most challenging message I have ever heard. Truly, I've never heard it in any other church. And he spoke on the unequal yoke, and he went through the lot, and it was just so challenging. The next morning, he called me into his room and he said, "Mum, your prayers have been answered." I said, "What has happened?" He said, "I rededicated my life to the Lord last night." I said, "It was that talk at the church?" He said, "Yes." And the young lass that he brought in was an actress, the girl that he was with. She is to become my daughter-in-law shortly, and she has become a Christian. She became a Christian about a month after that happened. And she said that talk that night, she came out and she was furious. She thought it was the biggest lot of rubbish she had ever heard. And all the way home, they talked, and she said to Brian, "Do you think that was true?" He said, "That I'm not a Christian?" That man told me I was not a Christian. He said, "No, you're not a Christian." And so she said, he said, "Look, I tell you, he knew that he was away from the Lord, and he spoke on the second coming, and it really stirred him up that he was really fearful, because the Lord may come, and he was away from the Lord." He said, "Look, I'll take you." They talked till 11 o'clock, and he said, "I'll take you to some friends." She said, "But it's 11 o'clock. She said, "That doesn't matter. These friends are Christians, and they won't care if they have to get out of bed." Well, they did get out of bed. And that girl came to the Lord that night. And as I say, in February, they're going to be married, and having finished Bible college, he feels that the Lord wants him to work for him. We don't know in what capacity or anything, and she's 100% behind him. She led three girls to the Lord last week. Because she's gone through all the years of being a non-Christian and tried everything, she doesn't want it anymore, and she's a beautiful girl. So we have so much to praise the Lord for. I'm sorry I diverged there. So this is why, having a son like that, that I felt I could relate to these teenagers. And I can look at them, and so can my husband, and really love them. And they come in, you know, and so many of them come from broken homes. half the time they've got two and three fathers, they don't even know who they belong to half the time. And they come into the kitchen. My husband's a very loving person, and they just come in and sit next to him, and he just puts his arm around them. And, you know, we have seen many of these boys, particularly boys, strangely enough, and girls, but particularly the boys, come to the Lord, and they're going on. We've got quite a few I could tell you about that are really beautiful Christians now, and they're from non-Christian homes. And they have, some of them have become junior leaders at our camps. They come to our training sessions, and where Auntie Meg and Uncle live to them. And we've got such a closeness to them and to their parents that it's really tremendous. Now, where am I? I will tell you about just one miracle because time is going. And there's been a series of miracles. I just couldn't tell you how many. The Lord is in this work, we are convinced. And the electricity, I won't tell you the story of it, but we got the electricity for nothing. They wanted hundreds of dollars to put it on. And in the end, they said, well, look, we'll put it on for nothing. And that was a miracle. And all these things, many, many of them, even to the very small things that we needed in the camp. Matter of fact, we've got to expect the Lord is going to give us these things. We just expect this is going to come when we need it. And most times it does come. Now, when we got the land, those years ago, it was 1960, the land was allotted to us, and we were on a lease at that time, and we paid a certain amount of money. Well, people would say, well, you know, 20 years is not long, and what happens after that? They can come in and take the land from you. So we commenced writing to the lands department to see if we could buy the land. Ultimately, they wrote back and said, you can buy 1 acre. Well, 1 acre wasn't much use, because it was just where the buildings were, and that meant after 20 years they could take the rest of the land. We'd have nowhere to play, and it would be wrecked, because if they put other buildings on our camp, it would be just squeezed in. So we wrote letters. We had a tremendous secretary. Letters were going backwards and forwards all the time. And in the end they said, look, we don't want to hear from you anymore. It's you're lucky to have 1 acre to be sold to you. Nobody else has had even that, and the laws of the land are such that we can't let you have it. So our secretary wasn't daunted. He wrote to Mr. Askin, who was the Premier at the time and our local member, and he said he thought it was very poor that when we were trying to do something for youth, your government are trying to stop us and they're not helping us. Well, we had a phone call from the Lands Department. We'll come down and discuss this with you. And so he came down, and we had our plans, and he was quite impressed with what was happening at the camp. And he said, we would really like to help you, but there's no way you can buy the land, because the laws of the land are framed in that way that you can't buy it. He said, oh, I would love to. I know there's something I'd love to do, but I don't know that I've got the power to do it, but I could recommend it. My husband said, what is that? He said, we could declare it to be a public reserve to be managed by you. So Liv said, well, look, you better spell that out to me. What does it mean? He said, it's better than buying it, because it's dropped in your lap for as long as you work it as a youth camp. It's yours. It's gazetted through Parliament, and you don't pay any rates or taxes. So that's what has been declared. It's been declared to be ours while ever we work it as a youth camp. So that is really a tremendous miracle, I believe. I've got to get my thoughts back again to where I am. Just before last Christmas, you probably heard about the disastrous fires we had in the Coringai Trace. Now, picture our block just right on the edge of the trace, and this fire. We were the men from the fire brigade came down early in the morning. I was away. I went to an all-day prayer meeting. It was a wonderful day to go to a prayer meeting. So I didn't know what was going on, but we heard it through the news about lunchtime. They came down and they said the chase is on fire. It's out of control. The one and only tanker we have has gone out and it can't get back. So you're on your own. And here we were. My husband was literally on his own at that site at that time. And so he set about to prepare the camp. We had a big shed right down in the bush, and it was filled with tractors, trucks, cars, and everything had to be brought up to the lawn. We had a lot of petrol that was right on the edge. All that had to be disconnected, everything brought up to the lawn. When I got home late in the afternoon, we were the last car to get through from St. Ives. They didn't even know whether I'd get into the camp, but they let us through, and even then the fire was on the sides of the road as we travelled through, and not blazing, but it had started. and my friend was the last car allowed out again. By that time, two of our leaders who lived close by, after two attempts, were allowed in. But all the roads were cut, and we wondered, now why isn't anybody coming to help us? We didn't know that nobody could get in. The electricity was off and the phone was off. The phone was off for a week, the electricity for 2 days. And our water supply, well, it's never very much good from tanks. You get very, very bad pressure. Well, it was just so eerie. You just couldn't imagine. You'd have to be in it to just understand what it's like to have a fire of those dimensions. It had always been in the back of my mind. I wonder what it would be like to have a fire. We had had one 2 years before, and it was pretty big, and it was on the side of the dormitories. The whole hill was alight, but it was more or less just our area because children had gone into the bush and lit it. But this time it was a fire right through the chase because everything was so dry. It was 9 o'clock at night before it came, and we just had to leave the house. We had to go outside. It was dark by this stage, and as I say, from the afternoon when I arrived home, it was just such an eerie look, just a greyness, and the smoke and everything. And when it did come, it was really horrific. The flames were 60 feet high, at three sides of our house, right up to where, as close as we had cleared it. And at the pitch where it was at its worst, the fire wagon did turn up, but they couldn't do a thing because they couldn't even get near the fire. And before the fire, as the fire was racing down towards us, we had a big shed, and it was really very close to the bush, and it was a very new one, and it was full of a lot of valuables, and we didn't want to lose it. Now, my husband, although he's a member of the fire brigade down there, he really didn't know too much about fires, and we believe that God gave him the word as to what to do, because he didn't really know that this is how you operate with a fire. Just at a precise point, he said, I'm going to light a fire around the shed. And our son said, oh, no, Dad, not yet. He said, yes, I believe I'll do, this is what I should do. So he lit a fire around the shed, and apparently the big oncoming fire sucks the small fire up, back. It creates a vacuum, and it takes the fire away from the shed. And so that shed was saved, and we were very grateful for that. But what I want to get over to you is that normally I'd be terrified, I think, in something like that, because you'd really have to see it. Our house was only fibro. It could have just gone up like a matchstick, and the whole camp could have gone up, and we could never have started again, not after all those years. We would have truly lost heart. But nothing was touched, and we had such a peace. I'm not at any stage, I can truthfully say, and my husband the same when we compared notes later, not at any stage were we frightened. And we believed that nothing was going to go, that we were not going to lose the house or the camp. And it was such a tremendous feeling. The flames all around us, and just as if there was a huge bonfire, the sparklets into the air over both the cottages, right across the camp in thousands. The whole place was like a lit up, you know. And that continued at about 11 o'clock at night. And when we surveyed the scene the next day, it was only the bush that was burnt, not a thing. And it was just a tremendous sense of peace that we felt, and no fear at all. And I know that was not me. Livingston knew that wasn't him. It was only God that could do that. And so once again, in these circumstances that we've learnt over the years, you know, to depend on God so much has been really tremendous. About 2 years ago, a circumstance came into our lives, and I'm not going to say what it is. It was a very personal circumstance, but a very, very difficult one. I don't think I've ever been called to go through anything quite as difficult as that circumstance. But here, once again, it was a time of great learning for me, and depending on the Lord. Because when you have difficult times, as Shirley has told us, well, this is how it is truly wonderful that you have the Lord to turn to, because you have nobody else really. You can go to humans, you can go to friends, but they can only give a measure of comfort, but it's only the Lord that can really take you through the difficult times. And I guess during that time, you know, I might have questioned a little, I can't remember, but I know I lost a lot of sleep, I wept a lot, until I came to the point where, well, Lord, this is not right. I'm a Christian and I must depend on you. And I believe that we need to hand over these circumstances to God, just hand over the complete burden to him and let him take it. Now, that is not easy, as you know yourself. It's not easy to hand over to the Lord. Even in small things sometimes I've found it's taken me about 10 days to hand over things that I've worried about. And this was something so much bigger and something that could have just wrecked a life. And so finally I came to the point of surrendering it to the Lord. And time went on and the situation didn't get any better. It rather got worse. And yet I had a tremendous peace and a confidence that the Lord was working in the situation, although I couldn't see it. 18 months went by. We were in this situation for 18 months and all the time running camps and working very hard with the pressure of this over our heads all the time, and yet God took that pressure away. And but every now and again you would feel this confidence ebbing a little bit. Well, about May it came that I had one day that I just thought, oh, when will this situation ever resolve itself? Is it going to resolve, or is it going to turn to tragedy? And that particular day, my reading was in Hebrews 10. Now, I didn't choose it. It just happened that I was reading Hebrews at that time, and we were studying Hebrews in our Bible study, you know, your Bible course. And I read through Hebrews, and Hebrews 10, and verse 35, this verse just stepped out at me. Now, I might have taken it out of context, I don't know, but I believe that day that verse came from the Lord. So do not throw away your confidence, it will bring rich rewards, from the NIV. And my confidence from being down that day just soared right up, and I didn't lose it anymore. It was just as if the Lord was saying to me, this situation is about to be resolved. I'm in it, don't lose your confidence, everything is all right. That was the message I got. And I could pass over to you ladies, in these situations that come into your lives, don't limit God. He is able to work out all these situations, and while we hang on to them and fret and worry, our health suffers, and as Shirley said, it's not right to worry, but we're very human and we do at times. 3 weeks later, just a phone call came, it was over, and God had worked in this situation so wonderfully. And I, you know, it was only 3 weeks after the verse was given to me, and that was that really was a tremendous thing to me, because I felt that I learned so much through that circumstance, so much that I can help other women in it. The mothers of the campus come to me with their problems, and I feel that having gone through that situation, I'm much better fitted to help others. And I thank God now for that situation, having learned so much through it, because if we haven't been through a few down times and a few situations that are very difficult, it's very hard to help other people. We know that God can work in situations, but having been through it, people, I think, are more ready to listen. I'd just like to read this paragraph from the Know Your Bible study that Jean Radden wrote, and I feel that this is very applicable to us today. And it's speaking about the 11th chapter, these great heroes, men and women of faith. We are the children of God, who does the impossible, and we are called to a life of faith that expects and receives. They are wonderful people here. After all, they had no word as we have it. They had not learned of Christ as we have, but their trust was in God. We should be ashamed of ourselves, of our worry and our fear, and yes, often our despair, and we should spend more time with Him, in His Word, crowning Him Lord, King of our lives, and taking hold by faith of this God who is the God of the impossible. Now, what of the future in this work? Well, the future as we see it now, we are turning away so many children from our holiday camps that we're running, so many needy children. We're in a very, very needy area, that beach area. It's just swarming with young people. And every time we send out our application forms, the camps are booked up in no time because we haven't got very much space and we're turning away so many needy children. And the vision has been in my husband's mind for a long time of a very large building. But as he said, he didn't think he was the man to build it. He thought he was too old at 67 to start off with a huge three-story complex. No, I'm not capable. He told the Lord, I'm not capable. I don't feel I can do it. But the message he got from the Lord is, I want you to do it. So this is what is being done now. The committee gathered together and they said, now, we better just just have a look at our collateral to see just how we can go about doing this building. How much is it going to cost? Well, maybe $150,000. We're not sure the way costs are today. Where can we borrow money? But my husband said, now, we have never borrowed money to this stage. We have built this camp by faith. And I'm not prepared to build it by borrowing money. I want to do it by faith. They said, well, how are we going to do it? So, well, look, our God owns everything. This is what faith is all about. I believe we should go ahead by faith. So this is what we're doing. And we're now up to the, right at this time, we're up to the third floor. It's being formed now. Today the steel fixers are in. And the next lot of brickwork will take it up to the three stories. It's all paid for. There's enough money to keep on going. Now, it's only a small camp, and we believe that this is all of God. Because, you know, that's big money to have to, needs big money to build a building like that. And even after all this year, we started just over a year ago doing all that, the money is still there to go forward. And we just think it's fantastic. We believe it's just the work of God. And what about us? You know, Mrs. Chambers, I was thinking about you and the way you take meetings. And I'm sure that there are some days when you must get up and think, you know, I'd love to rest today, but you've got a long way to travel or another meeting to take. And I think it's wonderful that God has used Mrs. Chambers and is still using her so much. And we feel, where we are, that we would love to feel that God might use us for quite a bit longer. I know that camping work and cooking in the kitchen and the constancy of the work and building for a couple our age, well, we know that we are limited in the years that we can go, but we are very anxious that the Lord might continue to use us in this work. We feel very much at home in that work. We feel that this is what God has given us to do, and we feel we've only given such a few short years, and we would love to be able to give a few more years. And so we just go day by day in the strength of the Lord, and that's all you can do, because some days are tremendously heavy. During the school holiday camps, I'm cooking for 63 meals a day for 2 and 3 weeks at a time without a break. And I finish up sometimes at the end of the fortnight quite fresh, and I know that's not me, because at my age you do need a little bit of rest sometimes from a job like that. But you know, God has given me the ability, and God gives the strength for everything that I need. It's not that I don't get tired, I do. But I wake up the next morning and I'm fresh again to start. And God is faithful, and we just live day by day just allowing Him to use us. And we do want Him to use us more. We would appreciate your prayer for us, if you can ever spare a minute. Camp work is a tremendous work today, because you can reach so many young people and older ones too. And if you could spare a thought for not only for our camp but all camping in our country, it's a very worthwhile work and a very challenging work and a very fruitful work. Thank you.